Hello and welcome to the Should Be Known podcast. I'm Clayton. Yeah, it's not even that cool, right? It's just kind of something I came up with the other day. But anyway, Should Be Known podcast, welcome here. I'm Clayton Pixon, and we are having a great time attempting to wrestle, not just attempting to, we're making it somewhere, wrestling anxiety and depression to the ground. I read somewhere a long time ago that many people have talked about, I think it was talking about schizophrenia, many people have tackled it, but nobody has quite wrestled it to the ground. And that's how I feel about anxiety and depression as well. And you'll read anywhere that nobody knows what causes anxiety and depression. Nobody knows. And my big thing, of course, is that, well, if nobody knows and it's that important, then why don't we ask our Father in Heaven, as we've been invited to do and commanded to do, for knowledge that we need. Ask, seek, knock. For unto him that asketh, he that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and unto him that knocketh it shall be opened. We all know those scriptures. They're sprinkled all through the scriptures. And it's exciting because I believe that we can find answers to our questions. We've found many answers to scientific questions and questions of a spiritual nature. What is the question of anxiety and depression? Is that spiritual or is it scientific? Well, that's a good question, because science deals with everything we can see and touch and feel and taste and everything like that. And there are some things regarding depression and anxiety that fall outside of that realm, I believe. If you've listened to any of this, you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you haven't listened to much of this, what I'm talking about is self-deception. Self-deception is a phenomenon that happens when there's a truth that we know on some level and we go against that truth, whether intentionally or not. But if we go against it, if we act against it, then we enter into this state where essentially we have to justify our going against it, and we see the world in a whole different way that justifies our going against that light. And kind of goes in the other direction. It's not quite that simple, but that's the basic gist. And it's very enlightening because we can find out all kinds of things by looking at how we self-deceive and by understanding that. And anxiety and depression are self-deceptions, really. Now, it's going to sound, by my saying that, too harsh, too mean, definitely not politically correct. And unfortunately, political correctness is a thing in science. Not true science, of course, but in the scientific community, political correctness is a thing. And there's definitely an emphasis on excusing people from any involvement because people want to be nice in the only way they know how, which is to excuse people from anything they may have, any involvement they may have in their own problems. Am I getting anywhere with this long talk? Yeah, so here we are trying to tackle these things, and this is what we have for today. Reading some notes back from Tuesday, November 4th, 2020. To the question, is there a different quality of anxiety that is bad and one that is good or whatever? Like good anxiety and bad anxiety? I say the anxiety itself is indifferent. It's not a quantity that's bad or good. It's that the bad contains a lie. It's the lie that's bad, not the anxiety itself. That makes sense? Hopefully. Wednesday, November 5th, 2020. Anytime you talk about the fine line, Is it not about whether evil is involved? Excess this or that? Is it not about whether there's a lie involved? Basically self-deception? There's a fine line, for example, between taking needed time for yourself and being selfish. Right? Not killing yourself at work and being lazy would be too much of that, right? Talking softly and talking too softly. Talking loud and talking too loud. Being appropriately fearful and being overly so. There's always a fine line, as we call it. And anybody will tell you it's fine. It's not a sudden obvious thing when you go from appropriate amount to excess, this or that. There's excess humility, excess pride, you might say, or confidence or whatever. But I wonder if most people will say it's hard to pinpoint. And I think it is. It is for me a lot of the time. I definitely go over the line all the time with things, across that fine line. But I'm thinking of the teachings of Mormon, where he says it's as easy as telling the day from the dark night, doing good and evil, choosing good and evil. And is when you cross that line, cross that fine line, and go to excess of something, isn't that basically evil? It's like choosing evil. So it makes me wonder, well, maybe we can get good at that. Maybe we can actually learn to see it so that it is as clear as the day is from the night. It gives me a little hope. Excess, this or that, is on one side of the line, and the appropriate amount is on the other. And the line is defined by the lie. Appropriate anxiety and excess anxiety, for example. Okay. That was fun. It's not even that good. I should find something else to play. I will next time. Just bear with me. It's not that bad, maybe. Okay, so I just read a Time magazine article. The whole edition of the Time magazine, I don't subscribe to it, but we got it somehow. And the whole edition is titled Mental Health, A New Understanding. Okay, so cutting to the chase, I read parts of this, and I'm not sure how new I feel like this understanding is. I kind of feel like it's a little old. And why do I say that? Because there's no theory, the theoretical basis of depression and anxiety and these things like that are just kind of missing. They don't have, there's nothing there that ties in with reality. Let me quote from an article here. There's an article called Depression's Many Causes. Okay, so I was like, oh, not that I was expecting anything, but I was like, oh, this would be the place where I would look for an understanding of what causes depression. Depression's many causes. That's fine. It can maybe it has multiple causes. But what I basically found was that it doesn't say anything about self-deception, obviously, right? So to me, it's just missing that huge part, and it doesn't really say anything. It doesn't leave the reader with any understanding of what causes depression. All it does, and I'll quote here, depression is a disease influenced by age, gender, genetics, situational loss, or an ineffable mix of more than one of those. So that's basically sums up the whole article. It's a disease, and it's influenced by those four things: age, gender, genetics, and situational loss. First of all, the idea that it's a disease, depression is a disease. Why do I never say that? I do talk about depression as something that comes not by choice upon us, generally, although diseases can be caused by choices we make, right? But I don't know, to call it a disease, to me, makes it more of a physical thing. And it just doesn't make sense. A mental disease? Also, a disease is something that you can't change, right? And mental illness is something that can be addressed, I believe. Although I would emphasize that sometimes it's something that we'll have to deal with our whole lives, and we can find relief from this or that, but it could be with us for all of life. But I still feels weird to me to call it a disease. See what I mean? I feel like they're just casting that label on it. It's a disease, just to make it be okay to have it and try to help dumb people understand it better by not blaming the person for just not snapping out of something. But it's a continuum. Some people can snap out of it and need to, and some people can't. And you can only do so much. But, okay, anyway, enough of the disease talk. Okay, here's the very next sentence of the article. Understanding these factors can do a lot to strip the remaining mystery from the disease and make us better able to face and treat it. Okay, mystery. So you acknowledge that there's a mystery surrounding depression. They always say nobody understands depression. That's what they say. If you read around, people will say, well, we don't actually understand. Nobody understands what causes depression. There are a multiplicity of factors, and there are a multiplicity of factors. That doesn't mean there's nothing in common with it and that there's not a way to understand it. I believe there is, and we are lucky to be blessed with the most vast understanding. Let's just say that there are certain truths that have been revealed in these, the latter days, that not everybody has. So, quoting the conclusion of the article, if there is one thing that every single case of depression has in common, it's that it's unchosen. You get that? If there's one thing that every single case of depression has in common, it's that it's unchosen. And it's making the point, of course, that people don't choose to have depression, and that's correct. But I believe it's false that that's the only thing that cases of depression have in common. I believe that's false. It's just a false statement. Sorry, guys. That's how I believe. Because what you're saying is that's the only thing that different cases of depression have in common. They're unchosen. If that. And I'm saying, no, they absolutely have something in common. And it's the lie. It's the self-deception and everything that goes along with that. You think there isn't a commonality to depression? You better believe there is. There absolutely is. To say that there isn't is to not understand what depression is made out of, not understand the common thing that every case of depression has, which is self-deception and the lie and everything that goes along with that. So, yeah, that riles me up just a little bit. But to be brief, this new understanding of mental health I found to be lacking. And I guess to calm down a little bit and let my blood pressure lower a tiny bit, I would just say we're proposing some new understanding for mental health. And it involves principles that, how do I say this? See, this is what we're doing in the podcast. And this may be one of the great purposes, is to just help us understand how to talk about these things and how to think about these things. We're proposing that self-deception is common to all cases of depression and anxiety, and probably schizophrenia and stuff too. But let me just stick to depression and anxiety, I guess, for now, because I don't have as much experience with that, although maybe I have more than I think. But what's the lie of depression? The lie of depression is that you're worthless, that you're not loved, and everything that kind of goes along with that. I mean, the fact that God doesn't exist could be part of that. But if you already know he exists, then the father of lies isn't going to try on that front. He'll tell you that the God that you know does exist doesn't love you. or you're in disfavor with him constantly, or for this reason or that. So that will separate you from his love, according to the father of all lies. And that's where the lie comes from. Some people would say, well, it's just a lie in the sense of something that's not useful to believe. But I say, no, it's an actual lie. And it comes from the same place that all lies come from. Okay, you get me? And I do fear that the scientific community will have a hard time accepting this whole explanation of mental illness because, first, it's harder to understand, maybe, but that's really less of a thing than the fact that it implies truth and error. Because if there's a lie, that implies truth and error, which implies a God and everything else that comes along with that. And science ain't about to go there. But I feel that we still have the responsibility to declare these things and offer an explanation for depression and anxiety to those who are willing to accept it. So we'll do that. All right, how we doing? I'm not sure what my time is because I started not at zero. Oh, no, I did start at zero. Let's see. Oh, yeah, we're basically there. Let me just offer a closing thought here. Maybe related, maybe unrelated. But it's from a talk by Scott D. Whiting. Okay, and he's talking about the injunction to be perfect and to be as Christ is that we find in the scriptures. And the dilemma that's there, he doesn't talk about the dilemma so much in those terms, but I'm talking about it as a dilemma. Here's what he says. You are good enough, you are loved, but that does not mean you are yet complete. I'll read that again. You are good enough, you are loved, but that does not mean that you are yet complete. So, like I said, the place this comes from is that injunction of the Savior to be perfect, which some have pointed out means more like be complete. And one of the things that I think when I hear people point that out is, well, is that supposed to make it easier to be complete than it is to be perfect? Because being complete sounds just as hard as being perfect. You know what I mean? But what this guy is saying, Scott Whiting, is saying that what if that injunction, be even as I am and be perfect and those things, what if they're actually meant to be taken as they were said, as opposed to their hyperbole and they're just kind of figurative and they mean something different because nobody can be perfect and they must not mean that. So let's change the scriptures and change the meaning and find some other meaning that doesn't mean that. But he's saying, what if they actually do mean that? What then? Okay, that's a little, I might be getting a little off track. Think about that though. You're good enough, you're loved, but that does not mean you are yet complete. I'm not sure how to break that down and say exactly where the kind of dilemma is in there that I see. But what I see is, even if you take apart that sentence where it says you're good enough, well, technically we're not good enough without Christ, right? We're only, and I think he might say that in somewhere in the talk, but only through Christ are we good enough. So we're supposed to take that seriously and try to be better. And his whole point in the article is to just keep trying and do one thing at a time, but that we should do that. But definitely flies in the face, it seems, of psychology and the whole push to emphasize to people that they're good just like they are. They don't need to change. And anyway, I don't know if that was the best point to end on, but that was that. Okay, let's play a little piano again. Call it good. Thank you. Yeah. Well, this is the Should Be Known podcast. I'm Clayton Pixon. Hope you enjoyed that, guys. We're going to continue to try to wrestle this anxiety and depression to the ground intellectually and try to make a difference in the world in that way, that little way. But it's hard, but it's a fun challenge. And thank you for joining me on this. Thank you to all my fans who have said nice things about the podcast. And I hope you're enjoying it and look forward to your feedback if you have any. All right. You guys have a good day.